Thank you.
Good morning, sir. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, so you're appearing before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency, sir. I'm going to introduce you to the board members that we will be conducting your hearing this morning. You have the Honorable Luis Quinones, the Honorable David Mill, the Honorable, Mrs. Gail Rittenhouse. Sir, my name is Michael Johnson. I'm going to be acting as your hearing lead this morning. I do want to inform you that we do have a supporter that's on the line with her, Ms. Catherine Curtis. I believe that's your mother, and we'll be going to her at the appropriate time for her to make any comments, okay?
Okay.
Okay. Sir, could you just state your full name and your ADC number for us for the record?
My name is Tony Vincent Vogel, V-O-G-L-E, 98687.
Okay, sir, is it your understanding that you appear before this board for an absolute discharge of parole to your next consecutive sentence?
Yes.
Okay. You are currently serving a life sentence for murder in the first degree. You became parole eligible on August 28th of 2017. If you are paroled to your next consecutive sentence, you will be paroled to a sentence for death, which is a 2.6-month sentence. Is that your understanding?
Yes.
Okay. So according to your institutional progress report that you have here on file, it says that you will be residing with your mother, Ms. Catherine Curtis.
Yes.
Tucson. You have employment lined up with Curtis Payne and Handyworks, working for Bertha Curtis.
Yes.
You have an address and phone number that's available to your mother. I do see, sir, that you have taken quite a bit of program, especially looks like in these last 2 years, you've taken quite a bit of programming since you've been incarcerated, and as well as driver's license classes, alternative behavior. You've taken some construction, dump truck class, self-respect, tobacco classes, look like some construction type classes that you've actually taken in the last 2 years since you actually have been out. Most of the programming that you have has been in the last 2 years, look like in 2017 and 2018. Is that about right, sir?
Yes, that's right. I've done most of it, and they're telling me to slow down.
All right, so I also see that so you do have some discipline that you have received in the last year. You had a misuse of mail that was informally resolved, and what is that all about, sir?
It's an indigent envelope. It's not a regular stamped envelope. Another inmate had it in his possession. And it's because I moved to the other side about 4 months ago, and he had it in his possession. And on it, I told him, here, you can write to your family. I gave him a stamped envelope, but they didn't understand that, the officers. I just wanted a stamped envelope to somebody.
Uh-huh.
And I explained it, and they said, oh, and so they dropped that ticket. They dismissed it.
Well, it just says that it was informally resolved. It didn't say that it was dismissed. So you also, were you on a different yard or a yard that you weren't supposed to be on at the time that that happened?
Yes.
So why were you on the different yard?
Because they moved me to the other side. They put me in a pod called the RTH pod. It's a refuse to house pod.
Uh-huh.
And that's whenever that happened. I refused to house on Barchi Blue. There's Barchi Red and Barchi Blue.
Okay.
Excuse me?
Go ahead. I was listening to you, so go ahead.
Great. You know what I'm talking about two, there's just one unit, but there's two sides, you know, there's a red side and a blue side.
Okay. So you refused to, you also had received a citation because you refused to house, is that what you're referring to, because you were in fear of your life, sir?
Yes, now it's about me, you know. I told you guys, the last time I was here, I told you guys, man, that's it. I'm not handling anything through violence. I mean, a lot of these young inmates look at me and they think I'm still 20 again. I'm supposed to handle things the way a gangster handles it. I mean, they're going to pull a homemade knife out on a senior citizen. You know, they want me to go out there and fight. That's over with. It's over with. I'm going to the pro board here. Any day now, again. You know, and they just want me to be a gangster. I'm not a gangster. And they got pretty bad. It's just, they look at me like, wow, that's easy prey. He's an old man. He's going to the pro board. We can exploit him and whoever he's connected to, and they tried. And I couldn't take that no more. My mother demanded that I go to RTH. My brothers, my sisters, my aunt, everybody demanded I go to RTH. And I don't know if that could work, you guys. I don't know. And eventually, it had to happen. But they put me on report for that because they said it's routine. Seymour Ward Jones told me it's routine. They said, don't worry, it's not an official write-up. It's just something that we got to do. Hopefully this ticket will just be resolved somehow. And I said, well, I don't understand why I'm going to get wrote up for something like this. The violence here is just absolutely made out of control. And I'm done. And they said, well, you know, I mean, there's been 3 killings here on Marshy in the last 5 or 6 months.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, Mr. Bogo, you are what, about 55, you're 56 years old now?
Yes.
You just had a birthday this month?
Uh-huh.
All right. Happy birthday.
I was going to wish you guys, I hope you guys had a Merry Christmas, but I didn't see you. Something happened. My hearing got canceled. I panicked.
Okay. So I see that you've had quite a bit of discipline since you've been incarcerated, other than these last 3 incidents that we talked about in 2018, and then in 16 you had a positive refusal that was dismissed, but in November of 16 you had promoted prison contraband. What was that about, sir?
2016.
November of 2016.
I remember what that is.
Okay.
There was a big old commotion in the pod, in the building.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, those things do happen. And the next thing you know, it just wasn't, if they couldn't find out who it was going to be, everybody's going to get wrote up for it. And people just started throwing their drugs, their contraband all over the place, and they wrote everybody up for it, and it was like a format write-up. The write-up looked the same. They said, well, they found this and that, and they did. They found a lot of stuff everywhere.
Okay, well,
I did not promote it. I didn't bring in any drugs. I had nothing to do with it.
Okay.
I mean, somebody even busted a light, and everybody got wrote up for busting that light.
Okay, well, this is something in your file that says that you had something on your fingers during the close examination. You were wearing a fake thumb finger. Do you recall that?
Oh, Lord have mercy. It was a little, I don't know why they said that was promoting contraband or anything, but that was another ticket they even refused to follow through with. I think that they even dismissed that ticket and gave me back my visits and reinstated everything. It was just so silly. It's a little thumb, and it's just a little plastic thumb I made out of soap, or I don't remember, it was a mixture of that, and you hit it and you pretend that it pops off. It was a joke, and Officer Saeed saw it and he just put me on the report for it.
Okay, because in the file it says that you were found guilty, it was a minor, and that you had a loss of days, is what it says in the Ames report.
But it was a minor?
Yes.
And they gave me back my visits?
No, it says you had a loss of days.
Well, it's just by default, I lost a few days.
Okay. All right. All right, sir. You've actually been before this board two times, and with the exception of one time, you said that you're ineligible, but for absolute discharge and parole to your next consecutive sentence. And each time you've been denied. Is that your understanding?
Then you guys gave me a year recession. I didn't know what that meant.
Okay. So this is an incident that you incarcerated for that occurred back in 1991, in November of 1991, when the body of the 49-year-old victim was discovered in a closet in his apartment back in Tucson by the maintenance man. And a neighbor had saw you and your wife leave the victim's apartment with the television stereo and a table, the television that was in the house. Subsequent investigation led to your wife, Paula Vogel, was arrested in November of 1991, and she gave a statement admitted that she and you had sold the entertainment center to get money to leave town. And then you were arrested a couple of days later, in which you admitted to killing the victim during an argument, and said that he wrapped the body in a blanket and placed it in the closet. But then there's some subsequent information in the report that you walked in and your wife was hitting the victim with a rock, and the defendant, you grabbed the victim around the neck and was only trying to render him unconscious. Nothing more, but you realized that you had killed him. What exactly happened, in your words, sir, during that period of time?
Basically, that's what happened. You know, after it happened, I told my wife that, you know, the law is going to come, they're going to pick us up, they're going to bring us in. And she didn't think that, but whenever the police did come, and she gave all the statements up, and they just let me see it on video, and I said, look, I did this, and, but at trial, she admitted that she did the theft, that she sold the TV, she sold a cabinet. Uh-huh. I don't know why I was charged with the theft, but I was charged with it nonetheless. This man was pretty violent. I've met worse, though. Every time I had either come home from work or I would come back from the store with some milk or something, he was fighting with the neighbor or fighting with my wife. And I told him that, man, that's a no-no with men, my wife, especially man, a female. And at trial, his own mother, man, said, that it was about time. It didn't surprise her that this was eventually going to happen. I did move out. Me and my wife did move out and left him for a while. And, you know, he said he'd come back. That won't happen again. So we moved back, and within 1 week, he's got a handful of her hair, and it looks like, in my opinion, what I was seeing, it looked like, man, he was trying to hurt her real bad. That those two had enough of each other. And whenever he started on me, he shoved me hard enough for me to fly across the room. I hit my back on a table and it knocked the wind out of me. He grabs a chain, starts to swing it at me. It hurt, but I was so numb that I wasn't there to kill that person, that's for sure. We were friends, so to speak. We worked together, but he was just an alcoholic. He just was too violent for us. He almost knocked me out a few times. He hurt me real bad. I grabbed a rock on the ground, and at that point, I'm thinking, if he knocks me out again, or if he hurts me, he's going to go for my wife. If I'm knocked out, he's going to hurt my wife. Something, he can do anything. And it was actually meant fear for her life at that time, that very moment. Fear for both of our lives, that just went without saying. I grabbed the rock and I hit him in the head to knock him out. But it absolutely devastated him.
So why? So if you felt when you were in fear of your life and your wife, why didn't you guys just call the police instead of wrapping them up in a blanket and putting them in the closet?
That's the problem. A little awkward there. Every time I've been out for all my life, man, I just really never got to trust the authorities. They never trusted me. And my fears of the authority were actually exaggerated. I just never really got to meet the authorities for who they really were. Because, I did make a phone call to my parole officer, and my wife, who was doing very good right now, she actually talked me into reconsidering that with my parole officer. I hung up the phone. I did say hello to my parole officer, and he goes, "Well, are you?" And he's come on in, and I said, "I got some bad news to tell you." And he goes, "Well, no, what's that?" I never told him. But that did happen. I did get close.
Okay. Well, so you got quite a bit of a history. You got quite a bit of history of being incarcerated or not following authority or not doing your parole. I'm just going to go over a little bit of what I'm looking at in this pre-sentence report. It looks like going back to back in 1984, you spent 21 months in prison. Then you were transferred to a release center on January 10th of 1984. Looks like on June 1st of 1984, you were paroled, and 6 weeks later you were arrested in Washington on felony charges. Then after serving a jail sentence, you returned to Oregon because they revoked your parole. Then in April of 1984, you were again transferred to the release center, and you escaped from the release center. Then 12 days later, you were captured and returned back to prison. Then in May of 1985, you were again released to the release center. Then on July 4th, you again escaped. And then 2 days later, you were arrested and returned back to Oregon in December of 1985. And then 4 months later, you were arrested on several misdemeanor charges in Oregon related to driving while intoxicated. You received a jail sentence and your parole was revoked again. Then in August of 1986, you escaped from jail again. This was the third time that you hadn't escaped. 2 months later, you were arrested in California on misdemeanor charges, taken back to Washington. New felony charge had occurred prior to your DUI, and you were serving a jail sentence in Washington when you returned. Finished there in Oregon in 1987, you completed your jail sentence there. It looks like in March of 1987, you were re-paroled, effective upon your release from jail. You were allowed to travel to California on the interstate compact. You violated parole in September of 87, then your parole was again revoked, and then December of 1987, you were re-paroled. 4 months later, you were arrested in Texas. Medical records on April 1988 indicated that you were brought to the emergency room because of violent behavior, and you admitted at that time to taking some intravenous use of amphetamines. They observed open sores and needles. It appears that you were on drugs, but you had periods of a violent rage and made homicidal statements, and they did do a psychological evaluation, and the psychologist concluded that you had a personality disorder. But it looks like in November 1989, you were re-paroled, and that's when you began living with your future wife, and you had known them for a few years and less than a month. Looks like in February of 1990, the officers requested revocation, but no action was taken. In June 1990, 2 days after release from jail, you were arrested on new felony charges in Washington and received a prison sentence. The parole revocation argument was requested again, but no action was taken. According to the psychological evaluation in 1990, says that you were admitted to a mental health unit due to your self-harm comments, but you were discharged from there in 1991, having been deemed to be demanding and manipulative. But look, in 1991, you received early release from the Washington Department of Corrections, and two weeks later, you was arrested in California, then returned back to Oregon for your parole was revoked again. In August of 1991, you were re-paroled. You were released on August 30th of 1991, and then you absconded. While you were on parole, you absconded your parole, and you hitchhiked to Arizona with your wife. And, you know, this is when this incident started to happen here in Phoenix. So with all of that, sir, tell me why did myself or this board would think that if you were paroled to your next consecutive sentence, that you would follow, you know, do what you're supposed to do, follow the rules, follow your parole or your supervision, sir, when that's all that your history has shown, that you have, you know, escaped three times from custody, violated parole numerous times. What is it that says that you would really do and stay within your parole, sir?
Well, I've never escaped from a jail, and I've never escaped from a prison.
Okay.
If I remember right, you know, they call that escape. Escape in the second degree is you walked away, or you just didn't show back up.
Okay.
And back then, especially in the 70s and 80s, the parole system was in a poor conditions. It didn't provide a lot. It was very unfair to anybody, most people. They just threw you out there and hoped you make it. They didn't have GED programs the way they do now. If you did have a skill, you're still on your own. And they had a rule. If you violated parole, they put you right back out 4 months later. That's just the way it was. And each time that they just threw me back out, and I came right back, they would just throw me right back out. And then it was just so easy that it amounted to, so it looks like I was a bad guy. But if you notice, it happened in just a matter of a few years. I wasn't robbing banks. I wasn't mass shooting at people. I wasn't homicidal. I was just a little awkward. I started off in foster homes, and there was really no mentors there to get me on my feet and show me the right direction. They didn't have no cell phones or iPhones back then. You know, today I can just pick up the phone and say, would you like to have a visual? And send a picture, man, live feed to my parole office. Back then, man, the telephones were bolted to the wall. They weighed a ton. If I left the house, man, they had no, I wouldn't even know if my parole officer had called me. You know? I know that today, there's just no reason to be violating parole, especially when you got GoFundMe page. I saw, man, two young girls, man, go out there and say, we ran away from an abusive home. We had an abusive father. They got on a GoFundMe page, told their sad story. They got $250,000 in just 3 days and ended up on Fox News. And I said, wow. And food banks had quadrupled. Back then, I had to absolutely go all over town. I had to know someone personally. I had to go in the alley to find out where a food bank was. If I did need food today, they rub it in your face. And back then, they didn't advertise the GED on the wall. They didn't say, come and get your GED and show little pictures of balloons and stuff. You will have a party. People may take a photograph of you in your graduation suit. They didn't have it in the 70s and 80s. It was just a blank, dark world. And all those violations, those parole violations, wasn't something of a new crime. It's just, it was poor, very poor condition. Today, there's no excuse for a man or a woman to go back to prison.
Okay.
There's just so much opportunity.
All right, sir. I know you have your mother on the phone. I'm going to see if I'm going to go to her at this time to get any comments from her. Ms. Catherine Curtis? Ms. Curtis? Okay, go ahead and state your full name and present any information you'd like to present to the board.
First, I noticed that my son talks a lot to answer a question, and these are about 30 years ago, you know, 20, 30 years ago, and as we live it, to speak an odd as though it doesn't make sense to me. But I do know that he's broken over, there was trouble at home. And this was like 30 years ago, so.
Yes, ma'am.
He's not a criminal, he's a good man. And he has pulled all things on to protect others, and he takes the gun, makes it work, because he can't. That is good. We're going to take that and out. You've got to keep on. And you wouldn't have time to stories about me and my children. We're not we're good to communicate, and we're being kind, and we're no harm to society whatsoever. And my son does have the insulin. And all the years, I think he had a year in society and then locked up at least 35 years. He doesn't know too much about it. He comes home. We have served this time over, and that death charge was dismissed. He's not going to harm no one, and I have people who I've been there today, and not to represent him. And you understand that I've been brought up from the past.
Okay, miss. Ms. Curtis, you're kind of breaking up. Could you just speak up? Because we're kind of breaking up those last couple of comments we could.
I'm not fired in that.
Okay.
Okay, yeah.
Feel better.
I say that I am both. We have something good to donate and share with our little community. And now, I need help from him. He was my first son. And I don't know what else to say to the members.
Okay. Well, thank you, Ms. Bogart. I just want to, because it was kind of breaking up, I want to try to make sure I understood what you were saying, is that that you need some help and that you would like to have your son come home, and that in your opinion, you don't think that he's going to be that he would harm anyone anymore. Is that pretty much what you're saying, Ms.
Curtis?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So, Ms. Curtis. Ms. Curtis?
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to go ahead and continue on with the hearing. You're more than welcome to stay on the line. As we continue on with the hearing, okay?
All right.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Curtis. Mr. Bogle?
Yes.
Sir, I'm going to see if the board has any additional questions for you at this time. Seeing no questions coming from the board, Mr. Bogle, is there anything else you'd like to say to the board, sir, before we go into this discussion as we come up on a conclusion of your hearing?
Yes. The prosecutor, Ken Peasley, as you know, his background, you know, I thought that he was a little unfair, you know, giving me the first degree. Well, I think that man, an 18-year was fair. I even tried that, and for some reason, he slid that in on me. And then years later, man, he had to step down. If you recall, you did say that
don't know him, sir. I've heard that name before, but I don't know him, sir.
Okay. Do you have my sentencing?
Yes, sir.
Are you?
Yes, sir.
Okay. If you look at it, it was a short sentence. It says that it wasn't. He didn't suffer. I didn't do it for money. I don't even. It's non-competitive. And it says after 25 years, I think that maybe you should be able to see the pro board. It wasn't vicious or for money. And if you look at the minutes, the up to minute paperwork, it says that really nobody man can say that, man, what happened in that room except for there was a fight and it got out of control. The Ken Peasley man was not fair to me. If there's anybody that could do some justice for him, for me, it's this pro board for what that Ken Peasley did.
Okay.
I tried to do something about Ken Peasley. I tried to appeal. It's just financial, you know, poverty. Just it couldn't get me there.
Okay. All right, so Mr. Bogle, the board's going to go into discussion. So while the board's in discussion, we will make a determination whether to deny or grant your parole to your next consecutive sentence, okay? I need you to stay on the phone, Mr. Bogle, but I need you to remain silent while the board's in discussion, okay?
All right.
Okay, the board's now going into discussion. Mr. Bogle, and I do want to acknowledge that he has taken several programming these last 2 years that he's been out, that he's taken quite a bit of programming to get himself together and prepare to be released. However, I am concerned about these recent tickets, even though one may have been a minor, one was dismissed, that he received in 2018, which is just last year, that he received those citations. The reason that I'm concerned is because of his history of not following rules or his going against authority, where he's been on parole on numerous times, and each time that he was on parole, he either violated or got revoked. He sometimes just went out of state, transferred to out of state. Matter of fact, it says that he violated his parole when he came to Arizona and caught a bus and came here and got involved in this incident that he had here. While he was on parole, he did leave the state that he was on parole in. He's been to California, Washington, and Oregon, and each place he's been involved, as well as here in Arizona, he's been involved in some kind of crime. Although I commend him for taking the classes that he's been in, but because of his past history and his record of defying authority, I'd like to see him without some citations, you know, before he's paroled to his next consecutive sentence. And if he was paroled to his next consecutive sentence, it would only be a 2.5-year sentence that he would be paroled to. So I'd like to see some stability in him, you know, following authority and doing what he's supposed to do, that would feel as though when he was released that he would not violate parole as he's done in the past. That's my opinion. However, I am willing to listen to the rest of the colleagues. There's been no comments coming from the colleagues, and I am going to make a motion to deny Mr. Bogle an absolute discharge or parole to his next consecutive sentence. This incident happened in 1991. Therefore, I am going to ask for a 1-year set off. That will be my motion.
Second.
Agreed. The motion by myself. Second by Ms. Woodhouse. Agreed, Mr. Quinones, Mr. Sherrill. I'm going to mark the reason for the denials is that it was a serious and violent offense, that it was a loss of human life. Mark that he violated previous parole, probation, parole, and that he had a prior criminal history, and a repeat offender. I'm going to mark poor institutional behavior because of the most recent, I'm going to mark recent disciplinary infractions. That's what I'm going to mark in there. He does have a release plan, and his mom's on the phone who is there in support of him, so I'm not going to mark a poor release plan or no family or community support at this time. Is there anything else the board would like to see added or subtracted. All right, then, Mr. Bogle?
Yeah.
So the board has voted to deny your parole to your next consecutive sentence or absolute discharge at this time. We've also asked for a one-year set-off. You will be scheduled to come back for this parole board in about a year when the Department of Corrections schedules you to come back before this board. So did you hear your reasons for denial, sir? Okay. Mr. Bogle, that's going to conclude your hearing at this time, so I do want to thank you for taking the time to appear before this board. So could you put the CO3 back on and have the next person come in, sir?
Yes. All right, thank you.
All right, thanks. Okay, Ms. Curtis? Okay, the board voted to deny absolute discharge regular parole for Mr. Bogle at this time. He will be scheduled to come back before this board in about a year. That's going to conclude his hearing at this time. We're going to be disconnecting the phone at this time. Thank you for participating in the hearing.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks.